There is so much we do not understand about the horticulture industry as hobbyist plant friends. I have recently begun to understand this as I feel like I've kind of infiltrated the horticulture industry as I've started speaking at conferences and meeting more businesses in the space as this podcast has grown. I actually speak to the industry about you, the customer, the consumer. I'm like your biggest cheerleader for the industry. But usually when I talk to someone who's in the horticulture industry, when I go to these speaking opportunities, my jaw drops when I learn about how much love and effort it takes to get the plants we love to the garden centers, to the plant shops, into our homes. There is so much more that goes on behind the scenes that you can ever dream of. And today, Leslie Halleck, a favorite guest of the podcast, is pulling the curtain back to help us learn about how the horticulture industry works and how you might become a part of it.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care.
Hello, plant friends. Welcome back to Growing Joy. If you're new here, I'm Maria. I am here to help you care for plants and grow joy while doing so. And if you're old here, if you're a repeating listener, welcome back. I'm so excited to have you and be a part of your weekly plant parent journey. And if you are a repeat listener, you probably know Leslie Halleck, an amazing horticulturist, friend of the podcast, founder of Halleck Horticultural. She's amazing and my plant bestie. And today, she's not talking to us about understanding light or pest prevention. Leslie is talking to us about how to join the horticulture industry should we want to change careers. So a lot of people hit this moment after they start caring for plants successfully. They actually want to turn their passion for plants into a career change. They want to be engaging with plants on a daily basis as their job, as their life. And I know that can feel overwhelming, but there are so many different ways that you can work with plants on a daily basis as a living, and you don't have to be an influencer, right? Most people think that you have to like start a Plantstagram account and be an influencer. And although I 100% support starting a Plantstagram account, please get online and show me all your plants and show me everything you know. It's a really hard professional lifestyle. Take it from me, as I have built a media company in this space. It's taken me 7 years to do this and do this full time. Influencing is not necessarily like the way I would recommend you starting a career in horticulture. If you want a career with job stability and benefits and all of those things, there are tons of other amazing ways that you can make a full-time income and impact so many people through your passion for plants. And Leslie, who has had a decades-long career in the industry, she's done almost every job in the industry, walks us through today all the different ways that you can work in the industry. But more importantly, this episode is really just really insightful in how the industry works. It really opened my eyes up to it. And if you find it interesting, let me know and maybe she'll come back on. So without further ado, here's my dear friend, Leslie. It's the interview we've all been waiting for. Business talk with Leslie. I'm so excited we are finally having this conversation. Welcome.
Hi. It's a hot topic, is it not?
It's a hot topic, and I bring you on to this podcast because you're amazing, but also because I feel so lucky that I get to text you with my personal plant problems, and you're the best educator, and I want to share my wealth with my audience. But I also have felt so lucky that I've had you as a friend who I can call and ask questions about the hort business, and you teaching me so much about the hort business that I haven't understood as I've built a business in this space. And I'm so excited, Leslie, that we're just going to have a full chat about how to become a professional plant person that isn't an influencer. There's so many opportunities and you're the perfect person to talk about this with. I'm like freaking out a little bit.
Well, I mean, it is essentially what I've spent my 30 plus year career doing is certainly rooted in a passion for plants, but what I've done professionally really revolves around the business of horticulture. And I've never done a lot of advertising or promotion for my business. I didn't need to. What I've done is consumer-facing education, right, in plants and horticulture. And so that's what probably most people on social media maybe know me for, not realizing that my business is B2B. My business has been supporting companies in the industry, as well as teaching students and career transitioners who have aspirations to work in the horticulture industry. And, you know, my perhaps not popular take on this as a professional working in the horticulture industry is that, you know, being a social media plant influencer is not actually being a professional in the horticulture industry. And we can talk about why.
Yes, agreed.
We can talk about why there is a huge disconnect between consumers and sort of the plant influencer culture on social media from the actual inner workings of the horticulture industry, which can make it very challenging to really understand how all of it works and to start and maintain and grow a profitable, successful business. We can talk about kind of what happened with the plantdemic, if you will, and I can offer insight there. But yeah, it's kind of time, I think, to have some really pointed conversations about the realities of how the industry works and how to, in this market shift we're seeing right now, evolve into a real plant profession from what was perhaps an amateur passion.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing now, as I've been a full-time entrepreneur at this for a couple of years, is I've been in awe of how little the consumer knows about the horticulture industry. As I've now gone and spoken at some of these large horticultural conferences, and I've learned about like the back end of the business, and I've interviewed more entrepreneurs, it's kind of wild how little we know. And I go to an event like Cultivate or an event like TPIE, which is focused for hort professionals. And I'm like, oh my God, I have no idea about this industry that I'm kind of speaking in or speaking to or championing the consumers of. But it's so fascinating. But before we dive into that, because I have so many questions, I want to break down so many different things. Let's talk about the fact that something that people might not know about you is you have had what feels like to me almost every single job in the horticulture industry available to someone. So over your 30-year career, can you break down what you got your degrees in and then all of the different sectors of the industry that you've worked in?
Sure. Now, there are so many unique niches within the horticulture industry that, of course, I could never have jobs in all of them. So many things you wouldn't even think of our professions in the horticulture industry. It's a huge billion-dollar industry, subset of the agriculture industry. And so, yes, I have had a very wide and varied career, but even that is scratching the surface. So, you know, I actually started out as an art major, right? I was going to be an artist. That was what I was going to do my whole life. I spent 2 years as an art major at university, but I always was surrounded by plants and gardening and was gardening and taking care of plants from childhood on. I was very active with, you know, my mom and neighbors. So that seed of a plant passion was always there and it germinated while I was in college. So at 18, you know, I kind of just started getting this pull towards plants. So I, long story short, I decided to change my major to botany. And at that time I thought I would potentially work in plant research and plant ecology. I immediately, when I changed my job, sought out a local IGC, Independent Garden Center, in the college town where I was living. And there was a little garden center, 3 acres off the highway, called the Green Fiddler, which is just a hilarious name. And I walked in the door. I thought, okay, I'm going to get a degree in botany and I'm going to go get hands-on experience at a plant nursery, at a garden center, which you really have to do. You really need this hands-on experience. And garden centers, honestly, are the best boot camp for any niche in the industry. If you work garden center retail, you are going to get really fast training. So I walked into this garden center, not really dressed to do, you know, any sort of outside work. And I had the fantastic luck that this little garden center was owned by a spitfire of a woman named Carol Watson. And, you know, so, I mean, just a woman-owned business, that was just a really lucky thing that I stumbled into. She didn't really have any experience in the industry. It was a business that her husband had bought for her because she wanted to do something. So I walked in the door and I introduced myself and I said, hey, I'm a botany major at UNT and I want to work here. Are there any opportunities? And she looked at me and she said, see those plants over there? There's a hose over there. Could you just go ahead and start watering? Literally, I kid you not. She just basically...
Oh my God, I love her.
On the spot. But I just went in and asked for it, right? Like I went in. So the synergy between her and I, it was the perfect fit. Like she was ballsy. I went in and said, hey, I'm a botany major. Give me a job. She was like, all right, go water. So about 2 hours later, I walked up and said, hey, I'm not really wearing the right clothes for this. Can I go change and come back tomorrow? She's like, yep. I spent 4 years there through finishing my degree and another year after, basically doing everything. She really handed the reins over to an 18-year-old, 19-year-old. Very early, I had financial responsibilities. I had to take the cash to the bank. I ran the registers. I ordered plants. It was crazy, but it was such good training. So that job really laid the foundation for a lot of my professional proficiency. So I'm really thankful to that woman who gave me that opportunity. After I graduated and I was still working at the garden center, I wasn't sure exactly how I wanted to proceed with my career. So I took a year. I did an internship with the University of Puerto Rico. I lived in El Yunque National Rainforest at a research station up in the mountains for about 4 months. It was amazing. And I worked on plant ecology research, post-regenerative research from Hurricane Hugo that had defoliated the entire rainforest in 89. And that was an amazing experience. So I did a bunch of research when I was there, some of my own research projects.
So what were you researching?
So Hurricane Hugo defoliated the entire El Yunque rainforest, defoliated it completely. So researchers were looking, plant ecologists were looking at how does a rainforest regenerate and what can we do as humans to help it regenerate? So there were a bunch of test plots that we were working on with fertilizers or different cultural practices. So I was cataloging rainforest trees all day long.
That sounds like a dream.
It was. And that was where, if you read the intro to my book, Tiny Plants, you'll see the story of sort of how I developed my insane obsession with tiny plants by finding tiny orchids in the rainforest there. So that's a good little botanizing botanical origin story. So I also spent the rest of that year doing my own garden services business. So working at the garden center, started my own little company doing gardening services, which is where a lot of people start as a solo plantrepreneur.
Gardening services, meaning like someone hires you to go to their house and install landscaping or set up a garden or whatever, like that. Yes. Consulting
usually,
kind of.
Okay. Usually as one person, it's going to be lighter weight work. It's not going to be a lot of heavy installation or design build. You're going to be taking horticulturally caring for the plants in the landscape. And then I would work with contractors. I would work with subcontractors, guys that I knew in the industry to come in and do heavier work, right? Stone work or a lot of the heavier landscape work. I worked with them to do that. So gardening services is a very common kind of entry point for the solo plantrepreneur. We didn't call them that then, but that's kind of what we can call them today. Got into a master's degree program at Michigan State, focused in floriculture, flowering physiology of herbaceous perennials. It was kind of my top choice of degree, master's degree program at that time. So I was really happy to get a spot there. And after that, I ended up at the Dallas Arboretum as first the curator of plants and then associate director of research. I started the Dallas Arboretum plant trials program there, lots of other stuff. And then I decided that nonprofit was not really a good fit for me and my personality. I'm a hard driver. I like to be independent. I like to make decisions. I like to see faster ROI for my efforts. So it just wasn't a good personality fit for me. I did landscape design and maintenance services for about a year, did a lot of writing, and then kind of was recruited on as general manager for North Haven Gardens in Dallas, Texas, a very established family-owned IGC, Independent Garden Center in Dallas. Spent 8 years running that top to bottom. And after that point, all through my career, I had also been writing prolifically, teaching prolifically. I realized after 20 years that I had really figured the industry out and I had figured out how to make money at it, run the businesses, because I authentically understood the customers we were doing business with, what their needs were, how to communicate with them. And so I decided to honor a promise I had made to myself that I would be running my own business by the time I was 40. So true story, I realized 2 weeks before my 40th birthday that, oh boy, that deadline's coming up. I forgot. I was very immersed in my job. I loved my job. I love garden center retail. But I said, hey, I made this promise. I'm going to be 40 soon. So one Sunday evening, I just wrote a letter of resignation and said, I'm just going to see how I feel about this in the morning. And by 9 a.m., I was like, yep, I have to turn this in. I have to go. I have to go do this.
So it might feel counterintuitive to be buying grow lights in the peak of summer as this episode releases in August, but plant friends, this is actually the perfect time to get grow lights because this is when the light outside is going to start dwindling and your plants will start to get sad. So if you can catch the dwindling light ahead of time and ensure that your plants have all of the light that they need as we go into fall and winter, your plants will be so happy. Also, this summer, if you're looking to build a green wall or if you've added way more plants to your home over the last couple of months and you're realizing that you've run out of highlight opportunities for them, you should try a Soltec grow light. Soltec makes my favorite grow lights. I have them all over my home. You've heard their names before on the podcast. There's the Aspect, which is the pendant hanging light. The Vita, which is the grow bulb that screws into any desk or floor lamp. The Grove, which is the grow bar that I have installed in my bookshelf behind my desk, and the Highland, which is their track lighting system. However you need to light your homes, Soltec will help you light it with a full spectrum white light that makes your plants so happy. Their perfect spectrum of light closely mimics natural sunlight, and it ensures that your plants will grow vibrantly and healthy and still look just like a chic light in your home. No one would be the wiser if someone who doesn't know about plant lights or doesn't know about Soltec walks into your home. They're just going to think that these are just your normal lights and that they're chic and cool looking. But you'll know secretly on the inside that they're for your plants, which makes you awesome. And here's another bright spot. The Aspect is proudly assembled in America with the highest quality standards. Soltec's lights aren't just effective at growing plants. They are also meant to be displayed as decor, seamlessly blending into any space, making your home feel alive and vibrant. Plus, they have top-notch customer service and extensive warranties. You will have peace of mind knowing that your plants are getting the best light available. This summer, give your green thumb a boost, give your plants a boost, and transform your living space into a lush oasis with Soltec. You can go to soltec.com and use the code BLOOM15, that's BLOOM15, for a 15% discount. Once again, that's code BLOOM15 for a 15% discount at soltec.com. Experience the Soltec difference. On an episode all about the hort industry, we have to talk about Espoma Organic, a family-owned and operated company celebrating 95 years in the business of horticulture, in the hort space. 95 years, that's a huge accomplishment. I hope you've listened to episode 216 of the podcast. It's called Being Organic Before Organic Was Cool. And it's where I interviewed three generations of the four generations of family members who have run Espoma. It's an amazing entrepreneurial highlight of the company committed to growing high quality, organic and eco-friendly products for us, for our plants, for the pets, for the planet, and more importantly, for their employees too. They're an incredible business. So their products, let's talk about them. Whatever you're growing, Espoma has what you need. Whether it's your house plants, you can use their potting mix. You can use their specific potting mixes for succulents, cacti, African violets. My favorite way to fertilize my houseplants is with their indoor liquid fertilizer. You literally just pour it right into your watering can. It makes fertilizing houseplants so easy. And then my whole garden outside is planted in Espoma stuff. I'm a container gardener, so I use their potting mix. I planted all my plants up with Biotone Starter, and then I've been fertilizing with their Garden Tone and their Tomato Tone. But whatever you're growing, they have an entire line of fertilizers called their tones that are specifically for whatever you're growing. So they have Tomato Tone, Garden Tone, Rose Tone, Bulb Tone. Whatever you're growing, they have like the perfectly tailored fertilizer for it. They also have great composts. They have 100% solar-powered plant, zero-waste manufacturing, and eco-friendly packaging. So to learn more, go to espoma.com to see where their local dealers are to you. Or you can go to my show notes and go to my Amazon storefront with a list of my Espoma favorites. Thanks, Espoma. Wow. And you didn't have existing consulting clients at that point?
Nope. I thought what I would do naturally would be horticultural consulting, which I had also been doing on the side for many years, consulting horticulturally for properties and projects. So I thought that that was the natural course of what I would do on my own. But as soon as I made that jump for myself, which is what always happens. When you make a big decision and you take a jump and you conquer fear, there are usually epiphanies that happen about what you're really meant to do. And I had that epiphany. I gave them a 30 days notice. I recruited my replacement and I wrote an entirely new business plan, completely different. I said, why am I going to go do horticultural consulting, which I still do? What I'm really, really good at is the business of horticulture and marketing and communications. And that's something that we really honestly don't do a great job of in the horticulture industry. So I thought, well, why don't I contract myself out to other industry companies to help them with these things so that it can become more profitable? And I had 3 retainer clients on my docket before my last day of work at North Haven.
I didn't have a day off. That's amazing.
I didn't have a day off between the two. And I just kind of ran like crazy. And so for the last 12 years, I've been running my company, Halleck Horticultural, doing a lot of different things. I call myself a philomath. That means somebody who is a constant student in many different disciplines. I love to learn. I love many different topics. I don't feel like that success in a profession or a business is a one-lane prospect, at least not for me. I travel many roads at the same time to do what I like and to be successful. And so in my business over the last 12 years, that's what I've done. I've done horticultural consulting. I've done primarily business development, sales strategy, planning, marketing, you name it, with a lot of companies in the industry. And then 2 years ago, I said, you know, I've done this. I've been really successful at it. And I'm turning 50 soon. So here we are, another benchmark birthday. I need to take a break. I need to give myself some time to rest and be creative and make art, which I still do a ton of. I make a lot of botanical art, and rethink where I want to apply my knowledge and expertise and credentials, where I can help the most and do what I really enjoy. So I took sort of what I called a sort of sabbatical for the last couple of years, because, you know, I can't sit too still. I have to still be doing.
Yeah, the like most active sabbatical I think I've ever seen anyone take.
I think I honestly have been busier during the last 2 years of my sabbatical than I even was before, like running my crazy with my business. And you, or at least as busy.
You've definitely been as busy. Definitely. Yes.
So what I did during my sabbatical, I was hired on at UCLA in 2020 when the pandemic was really hitting education very hard. How do you keep people in class? You can't, you have to go online. So I started developing courses for the horticulture program and teaching through UCLA. And what's manifested over the last couple of years is that I have really figured out what I really enjoy doing is working with and mentoring all of these students that have really been ignited with a passion for plants and aspirations to actually work in the horticulture industry, either as their first career or as career transitioners. So I found a lot of joy and fulfillment there. And also really came to realize the lack of knowledge about the horticulture industry, how to work in it, and a path, creating a path from amateur passion to profession is really an unknown for most people. So I've kind of decided to sort of be an ambassador for that.
I love it. Okay. So I've heard in your insane career, also, I want to say I'm obsessed with, was I in your first class at UCLA or your second one with indoor plants?
You were in the very first indoor plants care and maintenance course. You were in the first one.
Which I recommend to anyone. It was the most amazing deep dive. I learned so much. I couldn't believe how much I learned and how much I've applied what I've learned in that class to my plant collection. But okay, so if we go through what I've heard you say so far, garden center retail, either working in the retail shop or running it, research, gardening service consulting, so like consulting with other people and their plants, business consulting, running a nonprofit at the Dallas Arboretum, landscape design. And my favorite part of your whole career is that you've come full circle and now you do botanical art. Are there other venues? I mean, I feel like the only other venue that, at least to my knowledge, in the hort space is like going and working at a greenhouse or like going into propagation. Are there any other ventures that people could consider if someone is considering going into the hort industry but doesn't know where? Did we miss anything? Because I do feel like you've covered most of it.
No, there are so many other niches. There are so many other professions within the horticulture industry. Yeah. So I hit ecology, I've hit retail, I've hit landscape design, I've hit writing, consulting, teaching. I've hit a lot of those that I think are maybe more accessible to people just from an understanding, but there's an entire industry behind that. Plant breeders, genetic research,
yes,
agricultural crops. Yes, wholesale growers, plug finishers, hydroponics, controlled environment agriculture, culinary horticulturists, plant biologists and scientists, interior
okay,
plant styling, landscape architecture. I mean, the list is huge.
Yeah. And interior scaping, like some people think plant styling, oh, it's like me, I come and like style your houseplants. No, like there are people who are in charge of going into massive business, like massive commercial buildings and doing, you know, three-story green walls and the maintenance of those green walls, or doing plants for an entire office, or like a much larger scale. But Leslie, you brought up something I want to go into, because another thing that I think most of us do not understand on the consumer side is the journey one plant takes to get from inception, like the birth of the plant, to our home. I feel like as a consumer, you think, okay, a greenhouse grows a plant to its entirety, and then the greenhouse delivers the plant to the plant shop, and then I go to the plant shop and I buy it. And this is, I think, the thing that's blown my mind the most about the hort industry is like, no. That plant has seen multiple greenhouses, multiple, you know. So can you walk us through like the life cycle of a plant, and also how, so let's start there. The life cycle of a plant. Can you walk us through that, and how many different people and expertises are required to make that happen?
Well, there are many paths. So there's not one straight line. So as being my student, and my students will hear me say, it depends.
It depends. Your teacher does. It depends. Yeah.
Right. It depends. So let's start with a plant breeder, or maybe a plant collector who has found a plant or who is hybridizing a new, you know, variety or cultivar. That may be somebody who just works by themselves. There are many companies that have very advanced plant breeding portions of their company, and that's all they do in the industry. So it could start there, and then that plant has to be tested for many years for performance. Is this worth introducing to the industry, right? We're talking about new plants here. Not new, but potentially new cultivars. So let's say a plant passes muster. Now that plant breeder either has to find brokers to license their cultivar to grow it and sell it, or that company who has breeding operations and plant propagation or development operations puts that plant into production. So now we have to propagate it. Well, you know, sometimes the plant propagates easily, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we can do vegetative cuttings. Some growers only grow vegetative cuttings that then go to a plug grower who grows the plugs. And then those plugs grow to a finishing greenhouse who grows the 4-inch or 6-inch or whatever size it is. And then that goes maybe through a broker to, you know, the end retail destination. Maybe that plant is going to get propagated via tissue culture. So they have to be propagated in a tissue culture lab. And then they have to go to a finishing grower. And then they go to retail. Some plants go to auction, right? If you've looked into the cut flower market, which is a whole nother part of the industry. So floristry and cut flowers, there's many professions within that world. There's also a lot of communications and marketing. So there are companies in the industry that do all horticulture that just make tags. They write information about plants and they make marketing. They make signage, they make tags. So there's a ton of work that has to go and cost, mind you, that has to go into tags that go into that plant pot. There are the pot manufacturers. There are fertilizer manufacturers. There are growing media manufacturers. There are technology manufacturers that make sensors that give you all the environmental data that you need for the greenhouse to grow those crops. The list is endless. The inputs are endless that go into this process. Then there is the consumer marketing that has to be done, the education to the consumer, right? So the person who's buying the plant. So that has to be done kind of by everybody. It takes a village these days. So the plant breeders, the wholesale growers, the retailers are all having to create content and information that then educates the end consumer, right, to get that plant in their hands and to help them be successful with it. It can be a very long path for an individual plant. And I will say that, unfortunately, the cost and input and all the work and all the years that can go into it. I mean, think about a tree. If you buy a shrub or a tree for your landscape, how many years has that plant had to be grown and watered and taken care of and, you know, manually cultivated for years, and you want to pay $10 for it? You know, that there's a huge disconnect between the understanding of what it takes. Same goes for food and food crops and food agriculture, right? What goes into it to get it into your hands? There's an interesting divergence between actual work and input and costs and the perception of value of plants and gardening products by the general consumer.
People don't understand how long it takes to grow out a plant to get there, because especially with social media, like I remember when I got into plants in 2018, it was all about the Pilea peperomioides. Yeah. And getting your hands on a Pilea peperomioides back when I was starting was like basically impossible. They were going for $50. I mean, same as Thai Constellations. So we went through this phase where social media drove this demand very quickly, but greenhouses couldn't support it. So they were expensive. But then as the greenhouses finally were able to propagate and grow them out and get them, and now you can go get a Pilea peperomioides in Trader Joe's for like $2.99 because now they're so like mass distributed. But 3 years later, when you see the Pilea peperomioides in Trader Joe's for $2.99, you're like, oh my God, I spent $60 on one 2 years ago. Yeah, that's frustrating, but it's also like, that's how it works, right? And it takes 3 years to cycle it out. I feel like the biggest controversy lately has been, yeah, like this whole Thai Constellation, we won't name names, but like the whole Thai Constellation controversy of like, they used to be so expensive and now they're mass available for $20 and people are almost mad about it instead of excited. But like, I don't know, what do you have to say about that?
It's a dichotomy. It's a frustrating dichotomy. And I will say again, there's a big disconnect. So the drive that you see on social media, plantfluencers and consumers on social media, I will honestly say it's almost not really part of the actual or conventional horticulture industry. It's sort of its own separate entity and sort of self kind of fulfilling structure with a lot of folks who maybe don't really understand the ins and outs of how it works. So a lot of the demand, right, that happened in the plantdemic with houseplants, it happened within that capsule of social media. That demand blew up. A lot of people, right? So Pilea peperomioides, great example. That used to be in the trade. Like a lot of this, none of this is new. So, you know, 70s, 80s, that plant was everywhere. And then it just fell out of fashion, as always happens with different plants and species within the plant and gardening industry. Trends come and go. And a plant might seem new to you, but it may have been in very popular rotation back in the 70s and 80s. And then just, you know, people got bored of it and they wanted something else. Design styles changed in the 80s. Indoor plants became less of a kind of mandatory design element. And so, you know, the demand for certain species fell off. So growers quit propagating it. And then what ended up happening is that a lot of growers just didn't have mother plants. They didn't have a source with which they could propagate. So it took a long time to get supply into the mainstream conventional horticultural pipeline. So all the folks out there are demanding lower plant prices, which can only happen when a plant gets in large enough supply that the price can moderate, which takes a number of years. It takes years to propagate. And a lot of tropical plants are very slow to propagate too, or difficult to propagate vegetatively, or they have to be tissue cultured. So it takes, or they can't be tissue cultured, right? And so it takes longer to propagate them, which is in the case with Thai Constellation. So if you want to break down how that happened, Thai Constellation is a chimeric form of variegation. So it's non-stable, but it is more prevalent around the tissues of the plant. So it is easier to get plants that have that variegation pattern than it is, say, your Achlorophyllus albovariegata varieties of Monstera deliciosa. So my understanding of how that happened in the industry was that kind of one company had the bulk supply of tissue culture Thai Constellation that was sold. The company that bought that material to get it out to market, again, because of the variegation, found it challenging to really produce enough quantity via tissue culture. So not enough of it came to market as fast as people wanted. Now that is much more available, you have the same people kind of frustrated or complaining that prices are too cheap and now you can get it everywhere. Well, which way do you want it? Do you want, you know, things are going to come and go, and what happens to be the rare plant of demand today won't be tomorrow. So you have to pivot. If you're a small business or a plant shop, you know, you really can't complain, or you shouldn't be trying to compete with larger vendors. You need to move on to the next thing that you can do as a small business that they can't. So, you know, on the one hand, if you want prices to be low and affordable, those plants have to be in large enough supply in the conventional horticulture market. The hobby grower, amateur, small boutique, sort of social media arm of plant growing, which is really not yet a part of the mainstream horticulture industry. You know, the way that you can survive and thrive is to continually pivot and change, right? And grow things that they can't. But to do that successfully, savvily, and profitably, you really have to understand the inner workings of the horticulture industry and running businesses in horticulture, and how that pipeline of collection or breeding, propagation, you know, growing on, finishing, marketing, and sales, how that works.
Yeah. Totally. And I think it's really sad that in, you know, the pandemic, I think we saw a lot of people launch businesses. And I feel like in the last 6 months, every time I open my social media app, it feels like another business is closing, another business is closing, yep. another business is closing. It's one arm of its business down.
Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
What are the largest mistakes that you see aspiring plantrepreneurs making that, I guess it's twofold, right? Because there are general mistakes you can make with or without the pandemic. And then I think there were like pandemic specific mistakes that people made. What are the most common mistakes you're seeing?
Well, you know, you and I had a lot of conversations together as the pandemic was on its way up throughout it. And then, you know, now on the other side of it. And I know one of the things that I kept telling you was that most of these businesses are going to fail. Most of the big businesses that launched are going to have to hard pivot because they didn't exist within the horticulture industry and with the mainstream gardening consumer before this. This was a bubble. it was obviously an opportunity, right? It was an opportunity for people to capitalize. A lot of people jumped in. There were a lot of unscrupulous people that jumped in to make a profit off of uneducated, unknowing customers. But there were also a lot of people that authentically just wanted to do this and mm-hmm. have a good business and sell plants and jumped in really not understanding, again, the industry or really understanding how to run a business that is dependent on live inventory, manage that live inventory, price it properly, and market it properly. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that I saw of people going in. You know, you don't know what you don't know, right? Until you start a journey.
Yeah.
But I think there was a lot of education and advice missing for a lot of the people that got into it. I think there were a lot of misperceptions and about expectations they could have about what they could charge, how to price, the infrastructure that's really required, the labor that's required, and marketing, really. And I also think another mistake is that not seeking out joining the horticulture industry to be able to take advantage of the huge network of resources, growers, connections, organizations, right? Networking, kind of staying separate or only social media based, you're missing out on really taking advantage of the infrastructure of the industry and really learning how it works and how to price and market yourself. So I think price perception is a big issue for existing companies in the industry, but I think it really hit a lot of the new plantrepreneurs and plant shops really in the face in this plantemic process. We are back to, if you look at economic data, if you analyze the industry, we're essentially back to pre-pandemic flow, pre-pandemic mm-hmm. conditions, pre-pandemic mentalities, pre-pandemic approach to spending within the horticulture industry. And I see a lot of the smaller plantrepreneurs and plant shops that are still alive or maybe failed. I use the word complaining because I only use that in terms of that they just may not be educated on the why behind what's happening, but complaining that it's impossible for them to compete with bigger growers, you know, on rare plants, et cetera, and that their margins are too slim. And I'm going to argue your margins are too slim because you don't really understand how to do this work within the industry. And you don't understand how slim margins are for a lot of people, big growers included. There's not enough
because
time, obviously,
not...
for me to get into that here on an episode today. It's a very complex, nuanced.
Yeah. You know, margins, it's not easy to replicate because your stock dies and gets sick and comes in with spots and whatever. Like, you can't base a plant business off of a merch business or a clothing business because, like, that sweatshirt that you're selling is never going to expire. Whereas, you know, plants, you've got a couple weeks to turn them before, you know, they're going to start being unhappy in your plant shop. It reminds me of, and I don't remember if we talked about this publicly or privately with Espoma, but we had Espoma on for a conversation about how they've kept their business running for 95 years. And they were saying, like, now it's so trendy to be organic and people are struggling to, like, make their products organic and keep their margin, but they've been organic from the beginning. So they've built their business with those margins. Like, they're not struggling as much because they're like, well, this is just something we've always done. It's always been our integrity. Like, this has just always been how we do it. But these companies who are now chasing the organic trend are struggling more because they don't have those margins built in.
It's not just, you know, the margins are reliant on your messaging and your marketing. I mean, ultimately, it comes back down to the people that you're serving, right? Mm-hmm. Who are you serving? And do you know how to communicate with them?
Yeah.
Right. So obviously, there's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of understanding of supply chain, a lot of really savvy buying skills. Honestly, if you want to be successful in this industry, savvy buying skills, both for live good and hard goods, are crucial. But it's also marketing and communications within the context of the hort industry and understanding the plant and gardening consumer, which you're not going to get from most mainstream marketing blogs, websites, anything like that. There are, of course, core principles you can use, but they don't always apply directly to these consumers. So it's a really interesting process. And yes, you know, Espoma, it's not really just about their margins. I mean, obviously, part of that is their infrastructure has been in place for a long time. So when it comes to getting their raw resources and their supply chains, you know, they have a really established historical infrastructure, but they also have a very established, long-running brand identity.
Yeah, totally.
Marketing voice. And that, I would argue, is what keeps their margins on target.
Totally. No, right? Totally. And that's the marketing side of it. I mean, you really do need such a skill set. What degrees do you need and or not need in order to join the Hort profession? Because it sounds like you've built your career as you were in school. If someone has a degree in art or has been a lawyer for their entire life or something like that, and they want to pivot into the Hort industry and they're exploring what avenues to take, like, what are the degrees that you need and what are the degrees that you don't need?
Yeah, I work with a lot of career transitioners. Obviously, let me just make a statement about social media in general, because I think, unfortunately, sort of the culture of influencing on social media, not everyone, but it's driven by a lot of people who are presenting the perception they're an expert on something that they're not an actual expert yeah. on. And, you know, call me old fashioned, but I feel like if you're going to sell yourself as an expert on something, I don't know, maybe you should actually be an expert on it. The thing about plants is that it's a science-based industry. It's a science-based mm-hmm. profession. So unless you do some work, more deeply educate yourself beyond your own houseplants and beyond your own garden, because let me tell you right now, that is in no way, shape, or form a preparation for you to be a professional. It is a root of a passion, but it's not a profession. So mm-hmm. you really have to make the effort to get education and hands-on experience. So there's a few different ways you can do this. If you really cannot reinvest in a degree program, even an associate's program, which would be a two-year program, of which there used to be a lot more for things like landscape design and horticulture, they're not as available anymore. But you may look at your community colleges and see if there's a program in an associate's degree. These days, you can do a lot more online work. Certificate programs are a great place to start. Now, please note that there is a distinction between getting a certificate and being certified. Getting a certificate in a profession does not make you certified. That's a whole nother level of professional advancement. But getting a horticulture certificate, like I teach for at UCLA Extension, usually it's about 2 years. We do all of ours is accessible online now, and it gives you a good foundational education in plant topics and whatever you're interested in. And it shows potential employers that you've spent time getting educated. It's a way to open a door for you in the industry. It also helps you figure out what you do or don't want to do in the industry as a career transitioner. So that is a good starting place, is a professional certificate in a particular, you know, discipline like horticulture. So that's one step. An associate's degree would be another. Obviously, if you have higher aspirations in the industry, getting a bachelor's degree in horticulture, you know, or related field is certainly a way to go if that's something you can do starting out or you have time to do or resources to do as a transitioner. Advanced degrees, obviously, if you, again, have specific goals that match to you needing a master's degree or a PhD in order to get that job or make those earnings, then that's what you would have to do. What I would say to any career transitioner is that it's no different than any other industry. At some point, you have to start at the bottom and get hands-on experience and training. So one thing you can't expect is to step into a role as a transitioner without really hands-on experience or knowledge and make the same you were making in your previously established profession. You're going to have to put in some grunt work, right? But getting educated will help you do that. And certainly going through a program, a certificate program, what that does is that connects you with actual professionals in the industry and opens up the whole world of networking for you.
That yeah. you and maybe ideally know. Some mentors. Yeah.
Yes. And mentors that you didn't even know existed. I think the thing about horticulture that we've touched on is that you don't know what you don't know. So without some form of education or networking, you don't even know what opportunities are available to you. You don't even know. Now, there are also ways to advance your career just by starting with hands-on experience, right? Like getting a job at a garden center or getting a job with a landscape company. State nursery and landscape associations also have certifications that don't require a degree. I'm the chair of the Certified Professional Horticulturist Board through ASHS, American Society of Horticultural Science. We have two designations. Not certifications, but designations, PPH, a practicing professional horticulturist, that does not require a degree. It requires 5 years of hands-on working experience in the industry.
That's cool. Yeah,
there's a lot of resources, and I teach about a lot of those resources in my classes.
Yeah, no, totally. Because you really are going into a whole complete different world. But it's interesting that there are so many options. Yeah. I mean, I know I've taken a bunch of classes at the New York Botanical Garden. I've taken, obviously, your class at UCLA online, which was amazing. And then the New York Botanical Garden has a lot of, you have to be in person for a bunch of them.
Yeah. New York Botanical Garden and Longwood's Garden. Okay. They both have 2-year professional horticulture training schools. Yeah. New York Botanic Garden, they do a lot of open courses, just like UCLA does, you know, for anybody who wants to register, but they actually have an in-person 2-year hands-on professional horticulture training program. So that would be another great option for somebody who wants to transition or wants to start a career in horticulture, but maybe doesn't want or yet want to get a degree. So both of those programs, Longwood's, New York Botanical Garden, are both good options. UCLAX, we have the 2-year horticulture certificate program. If you have a lot of time and you're aggressive, you can do it in less time. And there are a number of other online certification or training programs now available across the country, too many to list here in our time. But again, you have to make network connections, I think, usually within the industry to really even figure out all of this stuff exists.
I mean, I feel like even as I've just networked in the industry, as I've been at these conferences, it's like every person I meet, I'm like, whoa, I had no idea that was a role in the industry. You know, it's like, it's so interesting.
Exactly. I mean, you can get into landscape restoration and plant conservation.
Native specific plants.
Horticulture therapy. There are so many different niches and disciplines. The thing I'll remind everybody of is that it's all science-based. So you do need to learn some basic language of plant science, how plants grow, how to cultivate them, how to care for them. Especially if you're going to give advice on such things, you actually need to know what you're talking about. So getting some plant gardening horticulture education. Beyond a Master Gardener certificate, which is not a professional training program. So I will just say that right now.
Yes, let's talk about Master Gardener.
Yeah, if anybody wants actually to transition as a professional into the industry, that might be a good place for you to start. If you want to do volunteer work, if you want to engage in your gardening community, it's an outreach volunteer program through extension agencies, but it is not a professional designation. You may not use that name to sell your services. And it is not a training program. It's introduction to gardening information, but it's not going to prepare you to be a professional. So yeah, I know a lot of people start like
you could start with it. Like it's the pregame. It's the pregame.
Not to a profession. I will still distinguish that. If you want to immerse yourself in your gardening community and you want to volunteer and do outreach education on behalf of an extension agency, university, then the Master Gardener program is great. If you want to learn more about gardening in your home garden, if you want to help out at the school garden or the community garden, there's lots of volunteer opportunities that you can do. If you are ready to make a transition as a professional, I would recommend a certificate program over the Master Gardener program, if that's where you want to start.
100%, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Another thing about the hort industry that really surprised me as I was getting to know about it was how many multi-generational businesses there are. Yes. Are there any other, shocking isn't the right word, but like, are there any other fun facts or interesting things about the hort industry that, you know, the consumer might not know?
It's really interesting because it's such a big industry, but it's very insular, as I think has been alluded to, right? It's kind of a mystery to the public, if you will. And I think that's because, you know, plant people kind of just want to do plants. You know, maybe a lot of plant people really aren't good at the people part. They like to mess around with their plants. They like to be focused on their plant projects. And there's this annoying thing we all have to do is talk to people and sell things and communicate. So it can be a bit insular in that regard. And that's why I think there is such a disconnect between sort of the social media world of plants and the conventional horticulture and gardening industry, right? There's been a little bit more of a crossover with certain influencers kind of taking on brand sponsorships with conventional companies. There's a little more exposure there now. But yeah, there's a huge component of family-based businesses. I would say that's a huge percentage. It's family-owned businesses. And that can, I think, sometimes make it a little bit more challenging for new entrepreneurs, right, who want to start.
Yes, I would say that too.
And even professionally, it can make it challenging sometimes for you as a professional to move up in a company that has the intent of passing on those roles or company to family members, right? So that's a particular interesting challenge within the industry that I can speak a lot to and help people with as well. So I think the biggest surprise is probably just the depth and number of different professions and industry niches that are available to people. And I would also say the industry is really needs new people. There are a lot of opportunities and a lot of recruiting demands within the industry. There's just not necessarily a lot of marketing of that to the general consumer. So there's quite a lot of opportunity in the industry that people are unfamiliar with. I think the catch 22 about it is low price perception. I think the thing that we struggle with in the industry is that, you know, people want cheap plants and cheap gardening products, and they expect most gardening information and advice for free. Which, you know, that's one of my soapboxes is that, you know, sorry, for the most part, you got to pay for my time because I've got a lifetime of gardening information stored up in my brain. You want it. That's the supply and demand. I shouldn't have to give you that for free. So I think the nature of plant people is we want to be generous. We want to share our information, but that gets us in trouble when it comes to earnings. And that way, sort of, there's a low perception of earnings in the horticulture industry as well, driven by a low price perception of what people expect to have to pay. You know, so I think that's sort of the goal is to lift that up.
I also want to say, and I'll get called out for this maybe, but like, especially if you're a woman, as it's also a very male-dominated industry.
Oh, yes. Well, you know that I'm a very vocal, well-established women's empowerment advocate in the horticulture industry. Yes. So, you know, that has not...
You're my personal women's empowerment advocate in the horticulture industry, I feel like.
It hasn't always made me terribly popular, but I don't care. My approach is that I'm not going to guard the one chair at the table that is perceived as saved for a woman. I'm going to pull up as many chairs for other women as I possibly can. And if people want to get mad at me about that, really doesn't matter to me. Really doesn't matter to me. But it does take some gumption and assertiveness to navigate any male-dominated industry. You know, men still own most of the businesses, most of the money, and hold most of the power. So it can be challenging for women specifically to gain access to the networking resources they need in terms of people who have power, money, and make decisions. So that's another really important thing to consider as you're navigating a career or starting a business.
I'm running through my list of sponsors in my head right now. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure all of my sponsors are owned by a man, if not a man and woman team. I have amazing relationships with women in the industry that work at these companies. But yeah, that is very interesting.
And if you look at the stats for business entrepreneurship, women right now are predominantly starting most of the new small businesses. That is a fact.
So fascinating.
I work with a lot of those coaching clients directly.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that. So I'm so proud of you. I have watched you go into this quote unquote cocoon of a quote unquote sabbatical. It's like the busiest sabbatical ever. But I've watched you really like make this very intentional, thoughtful sabbatical cocoon phase as you are now coming out of your cocoon and coming out with all these new offerings that you have like really been taking your time to think about and create and ideate. And I know that there's so much more, but you have new offerings for the first time in a while that I'm so excited about and the value. And if you want to talk about pricing, like some of them are so accessible to people who want to make this transition into the entrepreneurial space in the horticulture industry or not in the entrepreneurial space and just want to build an industry in the hort space. So please tell us what you're up to and how people can start working with you in a more intimate way.
So after a couple of years of asking by UCLA Extension, I finally acquiesced and agreed to develop and teach two horticulture business courses through Extension. Because of this need that I've seen grow over the last 4 years of my working with students, you know, in the horticulture certificate program. So I am launching two new courses. The first being The Business of Horticulture. That starts September 24th. It's going to be 6 weeks, 2 credit hours. So it's not a big, heavy, long lift. This is an introduction. It will be.
And it's only 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's only 6 weeks. And the way that I teach my classes, it's asynchronous. So you don't have required meeting times. I do live bonus office hours with people through the whole course. So I'm going to introduce you to the hort industry, and I'm going to get into things like planning for profits, marketing, how to earn, and kind of manifesting either a business plan or a career path action plan. It's basically going to really introduce the industry to you if you are wanting to start a business, if you are hort curious, as I call it, about a profession or what kind of business you want to start, or if you already started a business and you're struggling with it, or you're just not hitting goals, or you want access to understanding the back end of the industry and how it works and how to leverage, you know, that supply chain. We're going to dive into that. I'm going to be teaching a follow-up 6-week course in January that will run concurrent with my indoor plants course called The Business of Selling Plants. That course, we're really going to get into the nitty-gritty. So this is for all the people who sell plants, whether you're a plant shop or an independent garden center. It's even helpful for wholesale growers, especially if you're boutique and you do both. This is going to address a lot of the mistakes and misconceptions I see in the entrepreneurial space about really not understanding how to manage live inventory and really develop savvy buying skills and marketing skills around plants, pricing strategies, and completely sort of eliminating that sense of competition with bigger growers and bigger retailers that is holding people back. That doesn't have to be a thing. So we're going to get into that. What I felt I needed to do alongside both of these courses, because I really have not been making my consulting services very available the last couple of years, is how do I serve this community of solo plantrepreneurs, micro businesses, or career transitioners in a really accessible, affordable way? How can I help them? You know, I still need to earn something for myself, but I don't have to work right now. So I don't have to drive hard with my business. I can just do what I think is going to be most helpful for people. So I have developed 2 concurrent 6-week group coaching opportunities that you can do the same time my courses are running. You don't have to be enrolled in the courses. You can do one or you can do other, or you can do both if you really want to like jam hard for that 6 weeks. So I have what I call my botanical business boot camp group coaching opportunities. And that's going to be limited to 20 people each. I've got them up on my website right now. Registration for both my group coaching and the UCLA X courses, which are open registration. Anybody can enroll for those from anywhere. I always have students from Europe too. July 29th. Registration opens July 29th. Class starts September 24th. Group coaching starts September 25th. And basically, I'm going to be there with you. I'm going to keep it cheap and easy. We're going to do it on Zoom. And I'm going to be there for you to help you develop your vision, your goals. We're going to workshop your challenges, be they business or career, and just see if I can really help people get on a path professionally or with their business, new or existing, where I can really authentically help people. That's what I'm going to do.
I love it because, well, I think there's so many different options you can do because like say the UCLA courses are preventatively expensive for you. You can just get in the coaching and like get started. Say you're going to do the UCLA, but you want to like get the most out of those 6 weeks. You could do the coaching and basically use the coaching as a way to like work through all the UCLA stuff with you in a different level. You could also take coaching after you've taken a course, like to keep accountability. Cause I find with coaching containers that I'm in, I'm in it for the accountability as much as I'm in it for the like getting out of the container holder. Like people need you and they need to workshop their stuff. But I also find listening to other people workshopping stuff, I learn so much from. And also just showing up to the container every week helps me stay accountable with like, okay, what do I have to do for my business this week? Meetings on Thursday, like I got to get it. And you've made it, you've priced it so accessible. How much is the coaching?
So 6 weeks is $450, which is like...
Yeah, it's insane. It's not even
way,
$100.
Way off my normal consulting rate. So my normal consulting rate is a lot more than most solopreneurs or plantpreneurs can pay because I usually work with medium to larger size companies and they will still have to pay my expensive rate. Those folks will still have to pay my expensive rate, but I do also do one-on-one consulting and coaching with folks. So if you just want a one-on-one with me, you can do that too. Or if you've done group coaching and you want to do additional, you know, we can continue. I'm very flexible. And I'm making it intentionally very affordable, specifically for solopreneurs and small businesses and career transitioners. So I'll be running another 6-week group coaching concurrent with the Business of Selling Plants in January. And then I'll run another one in spring when I'm teaching botany. Indoor plants will also be in winter. So I'm really creating these capsules, like you said, of accountability. I know sometimes people can get a little intimidated by group coaching, but they're very much like my office hours that I hold through UCLA. I mean, you're going to be able to bring your questions to the group. Nobody's going to be stealing anything. There's so much business to go around for everybody. And to be able to get really focused, strategic guidance. I mean, you know me, I'm a no BS kind of gal. I'm going to get to the root.
Yeah. And you over deliver. I know these calls are going to go longer than you're scheduled. Yes. Like, you're going to over deliver so much on all of these. So where can everyone find you? If they want to learn more, where should they go to learn more and register?
Yes, you can always find me at lesliehalleck.com. If you click the shop button, you'll see the Botanical Bootcamp group coaching sessions. I currently have two listed at two different times. I will add more days and times for additional groups if there's demand. So just shoot me an email or I'll create a wait list. You can also see the classes there. You can also click on the hire tab if you want to read through, you know, all the things that I do and my services. I'm on Instagram at Leslie Halleck. I mostly just post there about all my garden stuff. I give you botanical tips. I teach you about plants. I'm not an influencer, so I'm not like gunning for a bunch of traffic there. It's just a great place for me to communicate with people who are interested in those things. And then on LinkedIn, you can also find me at Leslie Halleck. So I would encourage anybody who is entrepreneurial or looking to make a career shift to really get on LinkedIn, connect with me there. And, you know, you can drop me a line through the contact page or DM me if you have any questions about the courses or coaching. I'm happy to fill you in on all the details.
Amazing. So proud of you, friend. Everybody, we will link to everything in the show notes and can't wait to have you back on the podcast sometime soon.
I'm so excited. And yeah, I'm really happy to get into everybody's botanical business very soon.
Yeah, love it. All right, plant friends. Such a good episode with Leslie. Please, if you are interested in transitioning into horticulture, go join Leslie's office hours, right? We're going to have links to her UCLA classes and her office hours, her boot camp. It's going to be so good. I'm so proud of her. She's so thoughtful in how she moves throughout the world. And really, I love this new season of her life, which is totally focused on helping the next generation of people enter the hort space. So love you, Leslie. Go follow her. All of her stuff is linked in the show notes. And I love you, plant friends. My door is always open if you have suggestions for upcoming episodes, upcoming episode topics. Do you have requests for stuff? Let me know. You can always DM me at Growing Joy with Maria or at Maria at Growing Joy with Maria. That's my email. I hope this episode was helpful. And as always, that it helps you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review. Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app
or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.